Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, Gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. I'm Jim Chapman. Woody Everton is sick. He is feeling under the weather, so wish him some well wishes on the Facebook, but he should be back soon. He just could not make it today. Just a couple of quick things before we get into today's episode. First, I appreciate the massive response that I got for those Q&As. Woody is still going to do his version of that Q&A very soon, but I want to let everyone know those packages are getting mailed out probably by the end of this week. I have them all ready to go. But, you know, we're a team over here, we're man down, and so I'm kind of doing double duty, and that's what we do, me and Woody. When one of us goes down, the other one picks up the slack, so I'm going to attempt to get those out by the end of this week. If not, by the end of this week, they'll go out the first of next week. But thank you to everyone who responded. I had some great questions, and I really, really enjoyed answering those. Now, let's get into what we are talking about today. And I know y'all are going to enjoy this episode. It's going to be a little bit different than what we cover typically on Bloody Angola. Usually that's focused on Bloody Angola itself. But this is kind of like too big to not talk about. It involves a juvenile center in Louisiana known as the Ware Center for Youth. Now, that is located in Coushatta, Louisiana, and it is a holding place for juveniles that are arrested prior to them being sentenced. So before that sentence is adjudicated, they're sent to Ware Center for Youth. And at that point, once they get convicted, if they get convicted, they get sent to an actual juvenile prison. But in this case, this is like a kind of like a holding center, I guess you could say, for non-adjudicated juveniles that are in jail, essentially. And, you know, the last couple of years, Ware has been under a microscope. And we're going to talk about what led up to that today. And then on a subsequent episode, we're going to talk about the results of that. So let me tell you what started this. Back in 2022, actually it was October 30th of 2022, the New York Times came out with, I don't know that I would call it an article. It was more like a, you know, if you've ever seen Jerry Maguire, and at the beginning of the Jerry Maguire, I love that movie, by the way. At the beginning of Jerry Maguire, he's talking about his mission statement. And he said it was like the catcher in the rye. You know, he just kept writing and writing, and he sent it. And the second he emailed it out to everybody, he was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But of course, once you email it, it's out there. I wouldn't call this an article. I would almost call it like a catcher in the rye. I mean, it's 47 pages of investigative work, allegedly, by the New York Times. This piece came out on October 30th of 2022, and the governor at that time was John Bel Edwards for the state of Louisiana. And John Bel Edwards got this article, he read it, and it was not, to say it wasn't flattering would be a way too low of an understatement. I mean, it was pretty much a nightmare of circumstances alleged by this investigation by the New York Times of Ware Center for Youth. And he, at that point, said, okay, we're going to have the state inspector general spend some time here and inspect all these allegations, and they're going to tell us what's going on at Ware Center for Youth. So that's what he did. He got in touch with the powers that be at the state inspector general's office. A guy named Stephen B. Street Jr. is the inspector general for the state of Louisiana. And he said, you need to look into all these accusations, all, you know, 50 pages worth. And you need to do up a report and get me a report. Well, they did that. This was in, I believe, the beginning of 2023. They start this investigation. It took quite a while. As a matter of fact, it just wrapped up a month ago from this recording. So April 25th of 2024, the state inspector general came out with their own report on what's really going on at the Ware Center for Youth. So on this episode, it's very important that we cover the actual article that came out, because you need to know and you need to hear all these allegations. Are very disturbing. Now, there's two sides to every story, and that's why on a subsequent episode, we're not only going to talk about it, I actually have a copy of the state inspector general's report on the Ware Center for Youth that was released on April 25th of 2024. So I'm going to give you that on a subsequent episode. But on this episode, we're covering the accusations via the article by the New York Times, and it was written by Megan Schutzer and Rachel Lauren Mueller. And this was on October 30th of 2022. And it's going to be, you're going to get both sides to this story rather than just one. And then You make up your mind on what you think, and I'm going to tell you what I think. Of course, everybody has an opinion, right? And I have a right to an opinion, and I'm not saying which way it is yet. I'll let you know at the end of the subsequent episode. So this article that came out was titled "Repeated Abuses, Overlooked Complaints, and a Surge in Suicide Attempts at a Detention Center with Powerful Allies." And it starts out talking about a lady by the name of Bridget Peterson. And it says, Bridget Peterson saw her son, Sloan, through the window of a holding cell at Ware Youth Center just 2 weeks after his 13th birthday. Even for such a small boy, a shade over 5 feet tall, barely 90 pounds, the cell looked cramped. 4 days later, he was dead by suicide. I remember screaming, "My boy is gone," Miss Peterson said. And it shows a picture of Sloan Peterson, no bigger than a minute, I guess you'd say here in South Louisiana, just a young kid. And it makes me very, very sad when I look at this picture. And I wish someone could have reached this kid. I could not imagine what his mother was going through after this and still going through, I'm sure. She soon learned that another child at Ware had killed himself 2 days before. Then she learned that her son had been isolated in that bare cell for at least 4 days, even though state rules said he should not have spent a single night there. The guards, who were supposed to check on him every 15 minutes, hadn't done so for more than 2 hours, just as they neglected to check on the other boy. State regulators' records and surveillance footage show it. It's like, what on earth is going on? The mother said. For a few days in February of 2019, the back-to-back suicides flashed across the news cycle around northwest Louisiana. But inside the walls at Ware, one of the state's largest juvenile detention facilities, children had been trying to kill themselves with stunning regularity. There were at least 64 suicide attempts at Ware in 2019 and 2020, a rate higher than any other juvenile facility in the state. Children have tied socks, towels, and sheets around their neck. They have swallowed baby powder, screws, fluid from an ice pack. Two tried to drown themselves. Escape attempts are surging too. At least 91 children have tried to flee since the beginning of 2019. A little more than 5% of those held at Ware in that period. In June of 2020, a girl told staff members that she was going to run away in hopes that the police would take her to the big jail rather than back to Ware. A second told staff members at Ware that she would rather be sent to a psychiatric hospital than spend another day there. Soon after, she tried to kill herself by leaping off a roof. Behind any suicide attempt lies a tangle of factors. But what has happened at Ware has brought into sharp focus pervasive despair among children that no one is going to rescue them from repeated acts of physical violence, sexual assault, and psychological torment. An investigation by the New York Times and the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California, Berkeley, Graduate School of Journalism found for years that Ware leaders have failed to report complaints of abuse, hired unqualified employees, and disregarded state rules. Records offer no evidence that state regulators have ever fined or punished Ware or threatened its contracts, even as inspectors have documented the same failings year after year. Local law enforcement officials have been largely dismissive over the sexual abuse allegations at Ware. The Times Berkeley investigation, based on more than 100 interviews with people previously held at Ware and current and former staff members, thousands of pages of records and court documents, and hours of security footage, reveal how a place meant to offer children care and rehabilitation instead descends into chaos and cruelty. Guards beat and choked their wards. Several forced children to endure sexual abuse at the price for phone privileges. They frequently maintain control by bribing children with food to assault other children. I used to tell myself I'm not going to ever get through this stuff. That from Asia Perkins, the girl who threw herself off the roof. In interviews and documents, 42 people held at Ware over the last 25 years described being sexually abused by staff members. Many accounts were corroborated by relatives, others once held at Ware or court records. In all, they identified 30 staff members who had sexually abused children at Ware. One of the accused, a longtime manager, still works there. Yet many said they had remained silent at the time out of fear of retaliation or the understanding that others' complaints had simply been brushed aside. Basically, you can't do nothing. You can't go tell on them, said Shakira Williams, who spent about a year and a half at Ware. Ware declined to comment on this article. The center may be extreme in some respects, but it embodies the chronic dysfunctions of America's juvenile systems, their stubborn resistance to decades of exposés and waves of reform. And y'all, I'll interject on that and say that's somewhat true. It is very hard to research not only juvenile justice systems, but prisons in general. They just don't let inside stuff get out. So that I can say that's true of pretty much all prisons. In Louisiana, and I'll continue on. In Louisiana, where brutal conditions prompted juvenile justice reform two decades ago, the system is again in crisis amid chronic staffing shortages. A succession of headline-grabbing uprising and escapes is being met with measures once banned, such as arming guards with tasers. Ware in Red River Parish is also emblematic of the system's pervasive racial imbalances. Roughly three-quarters of the children held there are black. Many are from urban areas hours away from this part of the state, which violently opposed Reconstruction and fought school desegregation in the 1970s. Most of Ware's guards are black as well, though nearly all of its leaders are white, and as is the local judge, sheriff, and district attorney. I don't, you know, seems like the New York Times right there is trying to turn this into a race thing for whatever reason. I don't care for that, but I'll continue on. Yet central to the story of Ware are the politics and protocols of this patch of northwest Louisiana forest and bayou, where a handful of influential men harness their power to direct millions of state dollars to the construction and nurturing of what is now a major regional employer, while insulating it from outside intervention. They had their political ducks in a row, this from Mary Livers, who until 2016 ran the state's Office of Juvenile Justice. It was pretty well protected, she said. At the time, allegations of abuse at Ware have frequently received superficial scrutiny from the local criminal justice system. Year after year, records and interviews show the sheriff's office conducted cursory investigations, sometimes failing to interview key witnesses or rejecting out-of-hand allegations from children they viewed as incorrigible criminals. So let me comment on that real quick. What they're basically saying here is, look, these are bad kids, and they're going to lie. And in a lot of cases, that's probably true. I mean, you know, these kids are 13, 14, 15 years old, and they're known to lie. Not saying all these kids lied, but I can see somebody thinking that. Now, we'll continue on. Julie Jones, who has prosecuted three Ware guards for sexual abuse in her 13 years as DA, offered each of them plea bargains to keep them out of prison and off sex offender registries. So there you go. There's a case where, you know, these people plea bargain to sexual abuse, which is typically not going to happen if you didn't do it, almost always. And so that tells me that some of these allegations were obviously true. Continuing on, I do not like the idea of burdening someone with a charge they do not deserve. That from the district attorney, Ms. Jones. Asked if those cases gave her concerns about the safety of children at Ware, she responded, "We're talking about armed robbers and murderers. And these girls haven't even hit age 18 yet. Some of them? Do I worry about their safety? No, I don't. I think that they're quite capable of taking care of themselves. In fact, while some of the children at Ware are held for violent crimes, the vast majority are girls and boys like Sloan Peterson, sent there for nonviolent offenses or infractions as minor as skipping school. It is summertime, and you can cut down on your time in the kitchen so you can get back to enjoying the summertime sunshine thanks to HelloFresh's quick and easy recipes. Every week's menu features options that are ready in just 20 minutes or less. That's even quicker than delivery. Heading out for vacation? No problem. Just update your delivery address and enjoy easy HelloFresh meals at your vacation destination. Plans are flexible, so they work with your changing schedule. Look, going to the grocery store, searching for ingredients, for me, well, it always ends up like a trip to the dentist, painful and time-consuming. That's why I turn to HelloFresh. The time I save not researching how much garlic to add to my spaghetti or what aisle the ginger root is on allows me more time to research the largest maximum security prison in America, and I love that. And that crunchy, hot honey chicken? Don't even get me started on how good that meal is. Go to HelloFresh.com/BloodyAngolaApps for free appetizers for life. One appetizer per box while subscription is active. That's free appetizers for life at HelloFresh.com/BloodyAngolaApps. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Wow. We knew there would be consequences, his mother said, but my kid didn't deserve to die because he set fire to a roll of toilet paper at the school. On Thursday nights in the late 1980s, some of the most powerful men in Louisiana, judges, sheriff's deputies, and politicians from seven neighboring parishes began meeting at what's known as the Catfish Bend Restaurant, south of town, to discuss a shared problem: where to send the local children when they break the law. Some of Louisiana's larger parishes had their own juvenile detention centers, but in small parishes like Red River, officials had hoped they could snag empty beds at considerable expense. At a center in, say, Lafayette or Baton Rouge, several hours away. One Catfish Bend participant was Donald Kelly, a close confidant of Governor Edwin Edwards. As the Democratic floor leader in the state Senate, Mr. Kelly wielded significant influence over state budgets. Now he would use it to secure funding for a juvenile facility serving all seven parishes. Red River is one of Louisiana's least populated parishes. But Mr. Kelly said in an interview that he worked to have the new center built there, in the place where he grew up and where his former law partner was a judge. The center would be named for that judge, Richard Ware. Its director would be Kenny Lofton, a 29-year-old child abuse investigator recommended by Mr. Kelly and voted in by Ware's founders. As one Catfish Bend participant put it, Mr. Lofton was Donnie's guy. Ware opened in 1993 at a time when Louisiana was earning a reputation for operating one of the country's worst juvenile systems. A series of scandals led to the closing of all privately run juvenile facilities, and in 2000, the federal government assumed oversight of those run by the state. But Ware was neither private nor state-run. It was a political subdivision of the state, created by legislation and overseen by a board comprised many of the men who met at Catfish Bend. This structure offered them and their charismatic new leader ready access, tax dollars, and far more independence from regulators. Ware began to grow. In addition to the detention center for children arrested and waiting disposition of their cases, it added group homes for children with substance abuse and behavior problems. And with Mr. Lofton working his political connections, Ware won a no-bid contract to house every girl in Louisiana sentenced to secure care, the state's most restrictive form of detention for children convicted of crimes, along with a $5 million check to build new girl dormitories. One of the first to arrive will be Shakira Williams. On September 30th, 2009, nearly 300 miles to the south, Shakira woke up at the Florida Parish's Juvenile Detention Center expecting a routine Wednesday. Now, real quick, that is located, I've actually been there and toured that facility. That's located about 30 minutes from where, maybe not even 30 minutes. Yeah, about 30 minutes from where I'm recording right now. So she woke up there and thought it would be a routine Wednesday. And instead, she recalls she and about a dozen other girls were shackled and loaded into a van and headed for Ware. Shakira, who was 16 at the time, had entered the juvenile system the year before. Her mother, struggling with addiction, Shakira had turned to theft to support her siblings. "I was the oldest and I had to step up, or so I thought," she said in an interview. She got caught and was put in a group home. When she was arrested again for possessing an acquaintance's gun, she was sentenced to secure care at Florida Parishes. There, the program was tailored to girls, many of whom had a history of sexual abuse or pregnancy. Florida Parishes is just an hour from New Orleans or Baton Rouge, where most of the girls were from. We were doing good work with girls, Joseph Dominique, the administrator at Florida Parishes, said. Why send them so far up north? Shakira was struck by the straight cotton fields as the van drew closer to Ware, she recalled. There were a lot of things that would upset African-American kids, she said. At Ware, the detention center, school, and several group homes surrounded 125 acres of forest, and Shakira found a place that seemed to view her as irredeemable. Training materials used since 2014 teach employees that society expects them to serve, and as their last line of defense in protecting their community from those deemed unfit to live among them. At Florida Parishes, days had been carefully structured with school and therapy. Misbehavior was met with five-minute timeouts, but with Ware's new girls' dormitory still unfinished, Shakira said she was placed in a cell and put on a 23-in-1, 23 hours a day locked up with 1 hour out to shower. She and other children said that they were kept on lockdown until new housing was ready. Eleanor Morgan, a former supervisor with decades of experience in other juvenile facilities, said she had never seen lockdown used as much as in Ware. Experts have long known the prolonged isolation is harmful to children's neurological development. In 2013, the state limited lockdowns to 72 hours, but Ware continued confining children for far longer, five people held at Ware said. One said she had been kept on lockdown for 2 months. Now, it's important to note there that that is the people that were detained saying that, not employees. What made lockdown worse, several said were psychiatric drugs common to juvenile facilities. They left them feeling like zombies, forced to take Seroquel or Prozac, but fearing their effects. Shakira would hide pills under her tongue and then stow them under her mattress. "I don't know how they function with the amount of medications some of them were on." This from Janice McCannis, who worked at Ware until 2019. Ware's policies prohibit the inflicting of physical pain on a youth for punishment. But a majority of those interviewed for this article who had been held at Ware or worked there said guards routinely punished, degraded them, or inflicted pain. One favored takedown, they said, was chicken wings. Guards would cross your arms behind your back, then force them up until it seemed your shoulders would pop out of their sockets. Patricia Bell, who still works at Ware, said in an interview in 2020 that the technique had been part of the training until 2018. Now, you aren't supposed to do the chicken wings, she said. Of course, they still do. In reports to the state, Ware's nurses describe carpet burns on the children's faces and head-to-toe bruises from restraints. For Shakira, the abuse didn't let up once she moved into Ware's new dorms. She was no longer locked up all day, but she and others once held at Ware's overwhelmingly recalled a staff who tormented them. They would say, "My mom didn't want me for nothing but a disability check." That from Dijah Nixon, who was incarcerated in 2017 and 2018 at Ware. Six women said staff members had withheld sanitary pads as punishment. One recalled a white supervisor who treated black children differently. "I frightened her, and she called me the N-word," she said. Shakira's dorm supervisor, Tanika Haskett, inspired a singular fear. Nine women once held at Ware said she would often painfully restrain and beat children. "It was like a drill," said one former co-worker, Tracy Mosley. "She would go in the rooms and rampage and flip the mattresses, take the kids down." Miss Haskett, who no longer works at Ware, declined to comment. Sometimes guards bribe children to beat up other children. "They give us a sign by gesturing toward the designated target," Shakira said. "Then they take your order for shrimp or chicken." She remembered being constantly hungry and said that when a female guard came in her room and kissed her, she went along, enduring sexual abuse for weeks in exchange for food. You've got to survive. And there's an incident report from one of the, it looks like one of the incarcerated children here named Corsetta Pree, who was 15 at the time. And it has a copy of this incident report. It says Miss Laquita Ware was kissing Kersha and Shakira in the mouth and on the neck, and they was feeling on her. "I walked in the staff station and saw them, so she gave me Laffy Taffy to keep quiet. She put her shirt down when I walked up. This happened Sunday," and it's dated 12/15/09. Wow. "Not all employees were abusive," Samira Williams said. She was held at Ware until 2020, and she recalled that she grew close to her unit's residential advisor. She called her the mother that most children wish they had. But even the best intentions were challenged by Ware's culture. Precious Sellers said she had hoped to be a role model when she started as a guard in 2019. "That was knocked out of me the first time I went into Ware," she said. She quit after a month. In separate interviews, 29 people held at Ware over the past 25 years said they had endured sexual abuse by staff members. Incident reports and lawsuits reveal allegations against 13 more. They describe a range of abuses from suggestive comments and lewd gestures to rape. One girl said baring her breast was a quid pro quo for access to library books. Another said a guard forced her to take photos on his cell phone of her touching her genitals. A third said she was 13 when a guard raped her. The next time he tried, she fought back, only to be sprayed with mace. The time after that, she said, she just stopped resisting. Boys were abused too. This past April, a female guard was captured on surveillance video orally raping a boy. In some cases, guards continued to harass those held at Ware after they left. "You can be my boo, and I'll be your little secret," one wrote to a 17-year-old on Facebook 5 months after his release. Yet former residents and employees in interviews said Ware's leaders were largely indifferent, even apathetic, in the face of abuse allegations. In separate interviews, four women said a supervisor named Mallory Parson II had raped them. Another said he would enter her cell and strip search her. Three others said he had sexually harassed them. Shakir Williams recalled his boasting about sexually assaulting girls. He called it breathing. He would say, "I need everyone to go to sleep so I can breathe," she said. In an interview, Mr. Parson, who left Ware in 2013, described his accusers as criminals from the street who should not be believed. "I never had any intercourse with any of them girls," he said. "We can't do that. Too many people and too many cameras." But the eight women who described Mr. Parson's conduct said it typically took place in their surveillance system's blind spots. The nurses' bathrooms, the laundry room, the holding cells. Indeed, records show that abuse had been happening in those places for years. Gabrielle Hardy, sent to Ware in 2009 at 14, was often locked in a holding cell where she came face-to-face with Mr. Parson. Isolated in the cell, she said her heart would pound at the sound of jingling keys. She would cross her legs as Mr. Parson came in and sat next to her on the concrete bed. His breath would stink. He would be so close, she said. She would push him off, but he would not stop. "Sometimes you just let him touch you. You just let him, because you don't have a choice," she explained. Reporting him seemed futile because his conduct was an open secret. "That's their house," she said. "Whatever they say goes, goes." She considered hanging herself. "This is your life," Miss Hardy, now 27, recalls thinking. "This is it." Two women who said they had been sexually assaulted by Mr. Parson recalled reporting it to Ware's administrators. Three employees, a guard, a supervisor, and a teacher, said in interviews that they too had reported Mr. Parson for inappropriate sexual conduct. None of the five recalled any kind of investigation in response. This was between 2005 and 2011. It's unclear how Ware's administrators responded to these complaints, if at all. Ware declined to produce records of abuse and complaints against its employees. However, Mr. Parson said he had once been suspended while the sheriff's office investigated a sex abuse allegation against him. "The inquiry ended in a matter of days," he said, and he added that he had never been questioned. There is no record of him being charged. Among the 30 staff members accused of sexual abuse at Ware, in incident reports that Ware submitted to the state, as well as court files and interviews, was the detention center's longtime manager, Raymond Lloyd Jr. He was an imposing man in his 50s who had worked there since it opened. Two women said Mr. Lloyd had groped them. One of them said he stuck his fingers in her vagina. Four more described physical abuse. Dorisha Martin, incarcerated at Ware for more than a decade, remembered Mr. Lloyd entering the room as she was being restrained by several staff members. "He actually spat in my face," she said. "He pulled her head back by her hair, and then Mr. Raymond choked me unconscious." All these years later, she said she still cannot bear to have anyone behind her. In May of 2021, another child told her probation officer that Mr. Lloyd had choked her. She is one of 15 children who described being choked by Ware employees. That same month, documents show a third child confided to her probation officer that Mr. Lloyd told her he could touch her with one finger and make her melt. There is no evidence that any outside regulator looking into the allegations against Mr. Lloyd, who continues to work at Ware. The Department of Children and Family Services said the May 2021 allegations had been investigated by the local sheriff's office, which, for its part, said neither accusation had been reported. Apparently, this was an unfounded complaint investigated in-house that from Suzanne Galler, who is the chief of criminal investigations and narcotics for Red River Parish Sheriff's Office. She wrote on an incident report for both allegations. In an email, she said that the Office of Juvenile Justice had also assigned an investigator, but the general counsel for that agency said it would not have jurisdiction to investigate. The sheriff's office would not provide the Times with records of investigations into Ware employees, but Captain Galler expressed skepticism about the children's allegations. "You can't believe what these kids say," she said, adding that these kids are from all over the place, from down south, New Orleans, Baton Rouge. They're different. They're a lot rougher. As a detention center's manager, Mr. Lloyd was supposed to receive reports of sexual abuse. But former staff members and people once held in the facility described his response as often as grudging and dismissive. Marianne Wiggins, who taught at Ware for 14 years, said she was said that when a student confided that Mr. Partons had assaulted her, she typed up a report and hand-delivered it to Mr. Lloyd. "I don't think that Raymond appreciated that, and I don't think he appreciated that I believed the girl," she said. Former employees said they perceived a culture of picks and chooses that protected those with right local connections, like Mr. Parsons, whose father was a longtime Coushatta councilman. At least six of Mr. Lloyd's relatives have worked at Ware. Miss Morgan, the former supervisor, had one of his nephews on her shift. She feared retaliation if she reported him even for the smallest infraction. "Coushatta looked out for Coushatta people," she explained. Mr. Lloyd declined to comment. In 1997, David Atkins, a Red River Parish Sheriff's deputy, learned that a Ware supervisor by the name of Ronald Peace had been sexually assaulting a 15-year-old girl in a locker room. Like pretty much everyone who would be involved in the case, Mr. Atkins was quite familiar with Ware. He was one of its founders and remained a board member. Ware's assistant director, Joey Cox, took the victim's statement. Ware's director, Mr. Lofton, was permitted to weigh in on what the charges would bring. The judge on the judge was another board member by the name of Lewis Sams, and after Mr. Peace's conviction, he sentenced him to 3 years in prison. "Ron will be out in 1 to 1.5 years max," Mr. Atkins wrote in his journal after the sentencing, adding, "It doesn't help to try and keep kids from being sexually abused in Red River Parish." In an interview, Mr. Sam said he had informed Mr. Peace's lawyer that he was on the board and that he had later stepped down to avoid possible conflicts. He declined to comment on the sentence. Then it has a little blurb there and it says, "DA, District Attorney, Mr. Lofton, after the incident on October 17th, were any procedures changed immediately after that?" And Lofton responded, "Yes, sir, there were a lot of procedural changes. One thing, the kids, because of the unrest at the facility, the kids were in lockdown for a couple of weeks until we felt like we had control. That was during a grand jury proceeding against Ronald Peace."
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So this case would become emblematic of Red River Parish's handling of allegations of abuse at Ware. In fact, of the four guards convicted, y'all, of sexually assaulting children at Ware, Mr. Peace would be the only one imprisoned. In interviews with former deputies who investigated the abuse allegations at Ware and in records from their investigations, a portrait of indifference emerges. The sheriff's office deferred to Ware officials like Mr. Lloyd on what video evidence was relevant. Witnesses were not interviewed very well, if at all, and even the children reporting the abuses were not always interviewed. If there wasn't video or an eyewitness, there wasn't a lot we could do. That from Johnny Taylor, a former sheriff's detective. Most of the girls in there, it's hard to believe what they say. They're not in there for going to church on Sunday. One case he investigated involves a 15-year-old named Natalie Brannon. In 2014, Natalie was sent to Ware after fighting with her mother, who had called police hoping to scare her daughter into better behavior. When she came home 2 days later, she went straight to the shower. She's showering over and over and over and crying, and I'm just thinking, God, why did I put her in there? That from her mother, Jennifer Denman. Worried, Miss Denman took her daughter to the hospital, where she told a nurse that Natalie needed rape counseling. That same week, another 15-year-old reported that a Ware supervisor by the name of Christopher Morris had raped her. The detective reviewed video provided by Ware that showed Mr. Morris entering a bathroom with the girl, something that male guards were forbidden to do. And Mr. Taylor soon discovered that Mr. Morris had been alone in the bathroom with a second girl. When he learned of Natalie's hospital visit, he suspected she might be a third. Natalie was not ready to talk. She would later say Mr. Morris had threatened her mother's life if she spoke. Oh, wow. There's no evidence that Mr. Taylor looked into whether Mr. Morris's behavior exceeded beyond that week or if there were other victims. Two of Mr. Morris's colleagues said they were never interviewed, including a guard who took the original complaint against him and another who remembered his repeatedly taking private phone calls in the bathroom. Still, Mr. Taylor believed he had enough evidence to put Mr. Morris away for decades. Instead, prosecutors offered Mr. Morris 2 years probation without inclusion in the sex offender registry. If he pled guilty to 4 counts of malfeasance in office for sexual conduct, a charge Louisiana prosecutors often use against prison guards accused of illicit sexual relationships. The outcome surprised Mr. Taylor. With someone not from here, you threw the book at him, the detective said. Miss Jones, the district attorney since 2009, said in an interview that negotiating the plea, she had, among other things, looked at previous cases against Ware employees. 5 years earlier, she had negotiated pleas with 2 other guards, the cousins Chiquita and Laquita Ware, who were accused of sexually abusing 2 girls. One was Shakira Williams. They pled guilty to malfeasance in office and served probation. I try, whether it be right or wrong, for first offenders to give them a probationary period unless there's an aggravated crime, Ms. Jones said. She would not elaborate on why there were no aggravating factors in the cases of sexual assault by Ware guards on incarcerated children. What I like to do is say, here is your opportunity to do different. Wow. Y'all with me so far? This is, we're already deep into it. Let's just say that, you know, you can see why this article would raise some eyebrows, in high up state offices in Louisiana, which it did, but we'll continue with it. 2 state agencies oversee Louisiana's justice system, and each had ample opportunity to intervene at Ware. The Office of Juvenile Justice, which provides much of Ware's funding, assesses the effectiveness of therapeutic programs and investigates sexual abuse allegations. The Department of Children and Family Services licenses Ware and is charged with ensuring compliance with state standards. Ware is legally required to notify both of serious incidents of abuse, and both have broad investigative authority. They can also issue fines or revoke contracts and licenses. Neither agency has taken these steps against Ware. In fact, audits dating back to 2012, the Office of Juvenile Justice has awarded Ware ratings of effective, highly effective, and in full compliance. Records and interviews offer evidence the state oversight is frequently superficial and easy to manipulate. Inspectors fail to uncover serious problems at Ware. When they do identify shortcomings, often the same ones over and over, state officials rarely enforce demand for change. From 2012 to 2019, for example, the Office of Juvenile Justice repeatedly found that Ware's therapy program for girls were delivered by untrained staff members with little regard for the girls' individual needs. Each time that agency reiterated its recommended improvements. Yet, as of last year, Ware's counseling was still rated non-compliant with state standards. The agency declined to comment for this article. Children and Family Services, meanwhile, has consistently found deficiencies, such as failing to disperse medication correctly or do timely mental health evaluations. Each time, Ware has submitted a plan to address the issue, and in many cases, inspectors have returned to find the same problems. Glenn Holt, a former assistant secretary of the Office of Juvenile Justice, recalled Mr. Lofton saying that the state oversight was a waste of time. He made comments like, "If at any point I don't want to play with these guys, I'm not worried," Mr. Holt said, "because if I shut my doors, I guarantee you, you got sheriffs, you got local law enforcement, you got people, judges that are going to be screaming at DCFS. What the hell are you doing? You're jeopardizing public safety." When auditors showed up at Ware, Mr. Holt said the director stage managed a dog and pony show. He said, would give a big old country boy smile and ask, "What can we do for you girls?" Before inspections, there was a mad rush to fix everything, said Janice McClanis, a former guard. Children had their hair done. New bedding and rugs suddenly appeared. Inspectors also relied on Ware officials to choose which children would be interviewed, current and former staff members said. They picked someone who was scared, that from Kaylee Boudreau, held at Ware in 2014 and 2015. And she said, "I was that one." Dr. Livers, the former juvenile justice secretary, described Mr. Lofton this way. He thought he was the smartest, most excellent juvenile justice professional in the state of Louisiana. Who the hell has the audacity to tell him how to do something? When Mr. Lofton retired and ran for sheriff in 2015, he was succeeded by his longtime deputy, Mr. Cox. Ware's relationship to regulators, though, remained consistent. Ware is required by federal law, for example, to submit annual reports documenting all allegations of sexual abuse. In 2014, the year Christopher Morris was accused of sexually assaulting three girls, Ware reported no allegations of sexual abuse by detention center employees. It again reported none in 2018 when another guard was accused of sexually abusing a 16-year-old boy. Mr. Lofton and Mr. Cox declined to comment. Regulators had evidence that Ware was being less than candid in reporting critical incidents. Between 2017 and 2020, investigators cited Ware 9 times for failing to promptly and accurately report encounters between staff members and children that involve restraints or force. In a 10th incident, Ware reported that a guard had subdued a 13-year-old girl with her hand in the child's neck area. Video footage, however, showed something different. The guard had choked the girl for 14 seconds, an investigator for the Department of Children and Family Services found. The agency cited Ware for single deficiency, then closed its investigation. In a written statement, the agency said it had limited authority to issue fines and demand personal changes. When conducting facility inspections, the agency added that its licensing staff, not Ware administrators, choose whom to interview. The agency would not say whether it had ever considered revoking Ware's licenses. The department works with its providers to implement corrective measures designed to alleviate cited deficiencies in order to maintain the provider's licenses, the statement said. Meanwhile, at the Red River Sheriff's Office, An investigator reviewed a video of the choking incident and cleared the Ware staff member of wrongdoing due to the juvenile's size and level of aggression. And now we're going to tell you about Alora Fountain. So Alora Fountain had been crying all day. It was in March 7th of 2017, and a guard had been taunting her that her grandmother didn't want her anymore. This from her friend Keely Denise. That day, Alora, 16, confided to a counselor she had begun making herself throw up, and she told her friend that she wondered if her mother would miss her if she were gone. At around 8 p.m., she wrapped a sheet around her neck. All you see was her hanging, Miss Denise said. Alora's death was preluded to a rising tide of suicide attempts, runaway attempts, and general dysfunction that converged on the second week of February in 2019. Jordan Bachman, a 17-year-old from Colorado, had arrived at Ware 6 weeks earlier, charged with disturbing the peace and resisting arrest while on a road trip with friends in Louisiana. On Thursday, February 7th, he was put in his cell after fighting in school. Lawrence Chisholm, the second, a classmate, said before the fight, he had written these words on a piece of paper, dying inside. The shift supervisor that night was Travis Howard, who in the past had been disciplined for failing to report using force on a child. Ware's leaders had promised regulators that he would be monitored to ensure appropriate interactions with juveniles. It is not known what time Jordan hanged himself. He was found at 11:45 p.m. To this day, Miss Bachman can hear the coroner's voice waking her with the news. The next morning, Ware's assistant director, Stacy Scott, reported to state regulators that she and Mr. Lloyd had interviewed people and reviewed video, and room checks had been conducted every 15 minutes as required. Those assurances were false. When state officials reviewed the footage, they saw no one had checked on Jordan between 10 and 11:45. They also discovered the guards had falsified the room check log. Mr. Howard, the shift supervisor, said in an interview it hadn't been his responsibility to check on Jordan. He denied the earlier allegation of assault. Salome Peterson was at Ware that night. At 13, one of the youngest and smallest children there, others saw him as the exasperating little brother who never stopped talking, never stopped fidgeting. We would tell him, chill out, man, chill out. You're just tripping, Mr. Chisholm recalled. Salone certainly had his mental health struggles, ADD, ADHD, anxiety, as well as trauma from his early childhood before he was adopted. But he had never been into legal trouble until the week before, when he lit a roll of toilet paper on fire at school. The police found birthday candles and a lighter, and he was sent to Ware. I was assured that he was in one of the safest facilities around, his mother said. Several days later, Sloan, a boy who loved to tinker and take things apart, disassembled the light in his cell, picked the lock on the door, and when he was caught, he was placed in isolation. Mental health professionals would have likely warned that putting a child with Sloan's psychological profile in isolation would be a special torment. By then, he should have had full mental health assessment. But that didn't come until 3 days later, February 8th of that year, according to an incident report filed after his death. The social worker who met with him said Sloan had been curious about Jordan's suicide, but did not voice suicidal ideations and had been joking and in a good mood. At one point, it's not clear exactly when, Cora Sepledo, a 15-year-old tasked with cleaning the area, overheard Sloan in tears, pleading for help and telling a guard that he wanted to die. The guard, she said, told the boy, if you want to be killing yourself, just do it, because people just be saying that. Under state rules, isolation should not exceed 4 hours. By Saturday, February 9th, Sloan had been isolated for 4 days. Wow, 13-year-old boy. Though Jordan had died 2 nights earlier, guards once again skipped the required 15-minute checks. Video shows the shift supervisor, Jonquil Smith, checking on Sloan at 9:13. Then, more than an hour later, nothing. At 10:45, Travis Howard, once again on duty, walked by without checking, the record show. At 11:30, Mr. Smith finally looked in on Sloan. He had hanged himself. Another guard dropped to his knees and sobbed. A distraught boy pounded the walls of his cell. In the background, the YNW Melly song, Murder on My Mind, played from a speaker. The suicide touched off the unusual round of regulatory inquiries. Investigators cited Ware for improper supervision the seventh time in just over 3 years. For the third time, the state found a failure to do a timely mental health assessment. Also, for the third time, it found that Ware was keeping children in holding cells too long. But as with other citations, these carried no financial penalty or other actions against Ware's license or leadership. Questioned about the suicide at a public meeting, a senior official with the Office of Juvenile Justice said the state's investigation did not find concerns. 5 months after the suicide, the agency awarded Ware a new $450,000 contract to supervise at-risk youth. In September of 2020, the district attorney brought malfeasance and office charges against Mr. Smith and another guard for failing to check on Sloan. Mr. Smith is awaiting trial. The other guard has since died. Ms. Jones says she did not believe the criminal charges were warranted in Jordan's death, despite the video showing that the guards had failed to check on him. She declined to elaborate. Ware's administrators introduced changes, including a system to enforce room checks. Yet the children continued to be at risk. On Christmas Eve of 2019, a guard was arrested on charges of battering a child at Ware. In 2020, a guard was arrested on charges of helping children slip out at night to go on burglary sprees. In 2021, a guard was arrested on charges of taking a bribe to help a child escape. In this past May, a guard was arrested on charges of sexually assaulting a boy in a laundry room and then helping him and two other boys escape. And it's important to note, y'all, when I say this past May, it was from when the article was written. So this was May of 2022. The clearest indicator of crisis at Ware is the number of suicide attempts. Of the 243 recorded across Louisiana's juvenile facilities in 2019 and 2020, a quarter of those were at Ware, though it only holds about 5% of the system's beds. One child who tried to kill himself was Cora Sepulveda. Her breaking point, she said in an interview, came after Sloan's death following incidents of physical abuse and torments by guards. Standing on a chair in tears and preparing to hang herself, she noticed something odd. A guard holding up a cell phone and recording it all. I looked at them like, "Why aren't y'all trying to stop me?" she said. Three guards confirmed that their colleague had been filming. One of those guards walked into the building just as Cora kicked the chair from under her feet and rushed to take her down. But for Cora, who's now 19 and trying to complete high school, the sight of the guard filming her answered the question she had often been forced to confront at Ware. Was anyone going to actually help her? That's all I really wanted to know. If somebody really cared. Wow. And that ends the article. And you can imagine, I'm sure, that when this came out in October 30th of 2022 by the New York Times, which is one of the, if not the largest circulated paper in the country, it had some effect as far as response. It got, let's put it this way, it got what it was looking for, as it should, if even one-tenth of these allegations were true, right? Well, it went all the way up the pole. The governor, as I told you at the beginning, demanded that the inspector general look into this, and they did. And it took them a while. You know, it was a year and a half investigation, apparently. And just a few weeks ago, they received or they issued that report. I have a copy of that report. I'm going to go over that report in a subsequent episode with all of you. But what a story we still had to tell on Ware Correctional. So thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting Bloody Angola. Woody and I could not do this. You know, we say it all the time. We could not do this without you patrons. You are our supporters that enable us to justify the time and the research. We love to do it, but it's a business, and we really love and appreciate every one of you for allowing us to make sense of it, I guess you could say. So thank you. We love all of y'all. Follow the Facebook page. We have updates posted on there constantly. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman. And for Woody Everton, we are your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hillstring Gang, Rango the Three.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.